Right now it is time to bring in the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, Tim, Luke, and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, with Appraise This. Of course, you can find them on the web at tqag.com. And right here on a Tuesday morning on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Well, I'm going to ruin your day right off the bat.
Okay, bring it on.
Here we go. My first story that we'll go to is why a $30 million CryptoPunks auction fell apart at the last minute.
Oh, my God.
I thought we just
was not expecting that. I honestly was not expecting
that. We might as well just get this out of the way right away. The seller simply decided to hold. This was a Sotheby's thing that they put together. They described it as Punk It. 104 CryptoPunks sold in this all or nothing bundle. They estimated the bundle would go for $20 to $30 million, on par with a series of paintings that are much more what we all understand. And I guess the party atmosphere in crypto, whether it's cryptocurrency or NFTs, I guess Willie Nelson could sing "The Party's Over."
Well, in the thing is,
they actually held this party, by the way. They were, and 10 or 15 or 20 minutes into the party, things fell apart. They were partying, they were having a great time, everything.
Sure.
Well, this is there again. This is something that I don't understand the difference between, because it was like these little, they look like, I guess, paintings or little things, that miniature things. But I didn't realize that that's what the crypto is. Huh. I thought those were, I guess I don't understand the difference between cryptocurrency and crypto NFTs or whatever they're called. I don't know if an NFT is actually
it's
the money.
It's digital. Digital. That's thing. What it's digital, just like the currency. It's digital.
The currency is the cryptocurrency. Yeah. The art is the NFT that is created. That is a non fungible token, so it's a representation of, I know, no, but it's a representation of the artwork. So think of it as, you know, the digital photo in your camera. That's basically an NFT. So if once you take that photo, that's what was being sold, was a block of all of these different photos. And it was right during the party that this is what gets me, is that you throw those parties and anything can happen. I mean, you know, things can be pulled at the last minute, but then to have the consigner get cold feet and say, oh, no, okay, no, never mind. We're not going to sell. We're not going live. So it had been publicized. It had been out there. And then it wasn't. And they decided to stop the auction. And I think that a lot of it also has to come down to the entire trajectory of the NFT market over the last 12 to 18 months has been a downward trajectory. And it's, you know, it goes back to Beanie Babies. It's like, there was a big hype. Everybody was talking about it. And now what people thought were rare or should be jumping in and grabbing, it's not really holding its value.
Yeah, it's like the cryptocurrency market itself. I mean, you're looking at Bitcoin, which was at one point $70,000, and now is trading somewhere around $23,000.
Right.
You know, it's just the general decline, and I think that rubs off on the NFT market. I really do. I just think that there's a general now beware attitude out there. It's almost like it's not a Ponzi scheme, okay? But it's almost like when people find out that something has been a Ponzi scheme, and if you're last in, you're first out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, correct. But whenever you have anything like that in a marketplace where there is, first it's a downward trend, but then there's this negative, something that goes on in the marketplace. One thing that I think of immediately is the ivory market, is that it used to sell for such, you know, so much money, but because of the ban, and whether, and the ban is on elephant ivory, but it has affected the entire ivory market, because people, if you don't know the difference, or the ban has taken place so that you cannot sell it publicly, or it can't be shipped between states or even international. There's so many restrictions, people just say, you know what, no. And the market goes down. There's a big abundance of it, but the desirability goes down. And so that brings it down. And I think we're seeing the same thing with what's going on with these NFTs. Is more, there's also an abundance of artists that are trying to jump on this boat or on this train. It's a freight train, fast moving, you know, high speed train that's going. They're trying to jump on, and the reality is that not a lot of people are also looking for a ticket.
Well, I guess what I really am just not understanding is in the article, it talks about a crypto billionaire. I still can't figure out how you become a billionaire for something that isn't real. And then, last year, using his crypto wealth, he bought $78 million. Of art. Now that's a real thing. I mean, the art is real, but they paid for it with something that isn't real. I just don't understand it.
Okay, Greg, stop that. It is real. It's just like any other coin or any other currency. So you have to get that into your head that it is a currency. It's there, and that's what Marshall was saying, right? Is that it's trading at certain levels and it's doing this. The currency is there, and so he amassed a lot of this particular currency. That's all it is. If marbles were worth money, he just got a bunch of marbles.
Yeah, Greg, look at this as even like I said, I'm not saying this is a Ponzi scheme, okay, because I'm not.
Right.
But I'm saying look at it, it's a Ponzi scheme. If you get in early on a Ponzi scheme and you turn that scheme into making a lot of money, you then take that money and invest it in something that has long-term assets like art. It's just like a Ponzi scheme, because there's no regulation on NFTs, there's no regulation on cryptocurrency. So, you know, if you get in early and you make your money and you sell and you take that money, it's almost like, you know, mafia making money, cleaning it through banks. Really?
Right.
That's the way you have to look at it.
Right.
So, Marshall, yes, you did make my day.
There you go. Well, but also for this auction, I think that during this party, I'm sure Sotheby's whispered in the consignor's ear, just saying, or the consignor asked to Sotheby's, like, what is the interest and how are we looking? Because this was set up to be like one of Sotheby's biggest achievements in selling this level, at this level of NFT. And basically, Sotheby's had to tell the collector that there was very little interest, that we didn't attract enough bidders, and probably said, well, we may get there, but we never know. And he didn't want to take the risk. And that's why I pulled the plug. Because then, and we know what that happens, is when pieces pass at auction, it also gives it a, when pieces don't sell at auction, it also gives it that stigma as well.
Yep. Well, I just here's a question then. If the consignor canceled the auction at the last minute, like during the party, I wonder how, if there's a penalty for that because of.
Well, there may. It depends on whatever their agreement was. But, you know, you can't. Sotheby's sunk a whole lot of money into promoting and putting a party together and doing all of these things. So I'm sure that there was some sort of, now here's the question. Was it in cryptocurrency or was
that
it
was going to be my, that was going to be my next question.
I know you enough. I know. That's why I brought that up.
Well, let's go from cryptocurrency and NFTs to something that makes a little more sense. A rare 1679 violin of Stradivarius, okay? is going up to bid next month, and that could fetch up to $11 million. That is an investment that if you have the money to make, and you will yield tons of money for your family in the future.
Really. Right. Well, and here's the difference is we're talking about something that has that not only age, rarity, and desirability, but also there's a small, very small number that are available in the marketplace, and they're all tracked. Everybody knows where these pieces are. So when one comes up and they know the provenance in the background, that's why they sell for so much money, is that, no, you're not going to find one in, you know, in your basement, is that they have all surfaced and they've been tracked. So very different from these NFTs or things that are just mass quantities or nobody knows how many quantities. This, there's a specific number that is known, that is out there. They track it and they know where the sales, you know, when the sales take place. So this will be exciting to watch.
It will be. Apparently, there's only 10 known, and this is one of the 10. And if you stop and think about it, when was the last time we ever talked about a Stradivarius coming up for auction? I mean, they're so rare at this level that I think that's why it's going to generate a lot of interest. It's going to be, then this will really, really be fun to watch because, and I'm sure we're going to be able to watch it in real time. So that'll be kind of, that's the other thing that'll be fun to do is to watch it in real time.
You know, it's interesting. I sit here. And the name Stradivarius, to me, ever since I was a kid, to me meant something special. I wonder how many people out there have no idea what a Stradivarius is nowadays.
Oh, well, let me tell you something. I think there are more people than you think. Because in the early part of the 20th century, Sears used the name to sell a violin for the masses. And you could buy them through Sears, and it would, of course, it wasn't a real Stradivarius, but I don't know how, I don't remember how they ended up using the name, but they were allowed to use the name. And now every, do you know how many air quotes Stradivarius that Tim and I have seen at appraisal events or States?
Greg, they used the it was in Italian and it said made in the style
made
of
in the style, yeah. So people just when they hear the name Stradivarius, they realize that this is something it should be something special, but not every if there's, let's just take this for example, only 10 of these violas known, then the one that you have in your attic that you got from your grandfather is probably not worth very much.
Probably the one from Sears.
That's right. Well, we'll go once again. See, we're on a roller coaster of stories here this morning. The LeBron James Triple Logman trading card, which, by the way, I'm looking at a picture of, and it's pretty cool. That now is expected to set a record at an auction, which is coming up. And that auction, I think, is going on this week. It's a one of one. That's it. It's completely unique, and they think it could now, really, because it's a one of one, which we were just basically talking about 10, but this could, because it's a one of one, set a new record in trading cards.
Wow.
Is that the one? I don't know. I think I saw that on Live Auctioneers. Actually, I was in one of my notifications.
It's a card that uses patches from each one of his NBA teams that he played for: Cleveland, Miami, and the Lakers. And opening bidding starts at $500,000, but they think because it is just one, there are no other ones like this, that it could go as high as $6 to $7 million.
Yeah.
Once again, that goes back to what you were saying, Tim and Greg, that when you have something, well, first of all, it has the provenance of being LeBron James, but it's one of one. I mean, that's what makes a huge difference.
I don't know of any other sport card that's one of one. Honestly, I don't think I've ever heard of one that is just one of one before. I mean, we've talked about the Honus Wagner card all the time, and we talk about Mickey Mantle rookie cards, but there's always more of them. I don't ever recall hearing about just a one of one, and it certainly will be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Tim, did you see how this card was discovered? This card was discovered during a live online event hosted by Whatnot. Okay, that's a live streaming marketplace where people can buy and sell and trade collectibles. And it happened in May. So now we're looking at May, and the person, when it was discovered, well, right away, someone's turning around and saying, you know what? I'm going after the big bucks.
that's amazing. And it looks like it is being sold by Golden Auctions. And, you know, they have the expectation between 3 and 5 million. And they also said, but it could come close to the Honus Wagner, you know, which we've talked about before, which I didn't realize it must have sold again for 6.6 million. So these trading cards, and again, it goes back to what you were saying, it's that rarity, it's that one of one, but it's the patches that he wore, it's from him. It was also graded, so it also has everything as, you know, it's graded as flawless. So it was probably from the minute they had it, put it right into the protective encasing. So it has all the elements to do really well. So it'll be interesting to see what this sells for.
I haven't seen who it belonged to. I mean, where did it come from?
There's no name about that. There's no mention of the name. I tried to look it down. It just mentions that it was found on one of these just regular live auction sites. And
it does say that the card currently belongs to three Whatnot users who purchased a stake in the pull to have opted to auction it off. And so it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. I don't know.
Interesting, because that's a similar story to the Honus Wagner card, slightly different, but I mean that, you know, it ended up just belonging to a woman who used to work at the post office, I think. It's interesting that's it's kind of a similar situation where they are putting this up. It belonged to a consortium, I guess,
well,
even though it's only
3P.
But that's another one that's going to be interesting to find out, because, you know, I don't know how many other sports figures are as really as famous as he is. So I think that's going to be, if it does sell for $7 million, what's it going to sell for in the future if it sells? I mean, that's very, very interesting to see. So,
and in York, Pennsylvania, there was a Star Wars auction and a Bubba Fett rocket firing prototype sold for $236,000. Now, this is amazing because it's just a prototype, and it set a new record for things like this. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, Boba Fett is not really a huge main character in Star Wars. You know, that's the funny thing about it. It's come back now, okay?
Right.
But still, right. It's basically nothing more than a toy. It's nothing
well,
more
it's
than
also. Yes, but it's limited because of it being a prototype. And it's those prototype pieces that also are desirable. And but look what's going on with the whole Star Wars franchise. And there's just something that just, there was a new series that just kicked off on streaming, one of the streaming platforms. And collectors are looking for the rare pieces.
Well, Disney was smart. They bought the Star Wars Enterprise, and they put it up on Disney Plus, and they now have a million prequel stories that they're running. And what they do, what's interesting, and I'm waiting for these to hit the market. At the beginning and end of each one of these prequel shows, they show poster boards of you know, when they design, you know, when they put the story together. They've got all these different poster boards, and I would be willing to bet you that sooner or later, all these poster boards are going to go out for auction as well.
Right.
Which depict what they want the story to look like. You know, I've been watching this stuff, and I say, you know, there's got to be a reason they have all these poster boards that they show at they show it really more at the end of the shows than the beginning. But they're all obviously drawings, and they're obviously, if the show's successful and it's attached to Star Wars, they're going to be worth money in the future.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Did you ever think that what was it, 1976 76 or 77 when Star Wars came out? Did you ever think that all these many years later, it would be such a huge collectible area? I mean, it's just like certain characters just continue to amaze me that they are so popular, and that they, every time a new movie comes out, and we've talked about this in the past, where anytime there's a new movie that comes out, there's always a sale or something around the release of the movie, and it's almost as though they make the movie because they know they're going to make a fortune on the collectible toys afterward, the merch, as they call it.
Well, you're asking the wrong person, because as a kid, I was a big Marvel comic consumer, okay, Fantastic Four and everything, but also they had a lot of other interesting comic books that they came out with that weren't superheroes, but they were like The Boys are on streaming now, anti-superheroes, where there's always a backstory about what goes on. And I had all those comic books, every one of them, because I was a big Marvel fan. And I see now what Marvel has done. If you've got any of those original comic books from back then, you're sitting pretty. Yeah, you're sitting pretty if they're in good shape. Yeah,
What'd you do with yours?
I have no idea. That's the whole thing. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying you mentioned this to the wrong person. I have no idea what I did with them. And the funny thing is when Marvel came out and started making movies about all these things, that's when I said to myself, damn, you did it again, you idiot. Where are all those things? And I mean, I had boxes full of Marvel comics. You know, as a kid, you would read them once or twice, and that was it. Oh well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. my possible potential flirting with being a billionaire was thwarted in the early stages.
Yeah, because of people like you that threw things away, that's why we have a job today.
No, wait a second. I didn't throw them away. I put them in my drawer and put them away. My mother and my grandmother threw them all away. I didn't throw them away.
That's exactly why thanks to the mothers and grandmothers of this country, that's why we have a career.
That's right. All right, so you guys, are you busy next week, Tim, traveling?
Yes. Well, this week I'm in Chicago, so I'm at Hindman Auctions. I'm at the mothership, as they say, the headquarters, and I have meetings with a number of my colleagues and some clients, and getting my whole team together. So we try to do a check-in every 6 months, so that we say, okay, what do we need to address? What's happening? What are the next 6 months hold? And then next week I will be in Cincinnati. And we just opened, Heinemann just opened a new building and a new space in Cincinnati. So that's really great. And I have a new team member that is starting. Her name is Heather, and she's here in Chicago now. And then next week we will have meetings and just a number of different things around the Cincinnati.
You don't want to know what I'm going to be doing next week. You don't want to know what I'm dealing with while I'm home here. I mean, but I'll tell you anyway, we had a flood. So we just finished doing some renovations, and now we have to take up the entire floor because we had a flood with our air conditioner. So I'm dealing with contractors and estimates and picking out new. I'm semi-retired, but I'm busier now than I was before. So that's my life lately.
Now,
so.
in your spare time next week, I want you guys to look up what an original copy of the comic book The Watchmen would go for. And let me know next week an original copy of The Watchmen, and let me know because I had one of those.
You want us to burst your bubble again? Huh?
No, just let me know how much I could have. Maybe it's not going to be. I've got a feeling it's going to be worth a lot, though. But just if you can find it, let me know what the value of if you have a copy of
one
of those.
Is that number one?
Yes, number one. And that wasn't. I didn't get that new. I got it from somebody who knew I liked Marvel and the Watchmen. But it's number one. Number one. That was back in the early 50s when I got that.
Oh, good. That gives me something to research this week. I'm excited.
All right, guys. We'll speak to you next week. Have a great week.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Take
bye
care,
everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye. Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. You can find them at tqag.com on the web and also at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on the appraisal guys.